This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
I know they have a jury seated, but would you put money that some are going to drop before this thing actually kicks off still, and they're going to be left with needing more jurors in the last minute? Or at this point, now that the jury is seated, if some of the alternates drop and, you know, they don't have 18 anymore, they end up with like 16 by the time trial starts, do they go back and get more jurors, or is this locked in at this point? And if they drop, they drop.
You know, there is always that concern with a high-profile case, and especially a high-profile retrial, where a lot of people already know what happened at the first trial. There are similar concerns in Harvey Weinstein's retrial that's coming up. And so the judge is really has the responsibility of ensuring that there are enough jurors who are fair and impartial. And that's why they're padding the jury box. They want additional alternative jurors for just the contingencies you've mentioned. Folks might drop off. They might say, oh, wait, yeah, I actually know a ton about the case and I can't be fair. And any sorts of things can happen at that phase. And so it's smart for the judge to really have a ton of alternates to try to get this thing to some kind of finality at the end.
If they're down some come Monday, can they say we got to seat more jurors, or is the box sealed now? And we start running out. We start running out. I wonder about that, because I could totally see over the weekend, as people are with their families, and you know, like, are you really sure you want to be part of this? And, you know, some people getting talked out, because I'm going to guess over Easter dinner, somebody's going to be enjoying their ham loaf and Aunt Bernice is going to be like, I've been watching this on court TV and I think you have a high chance of being assassinated in your home if you stay on this jury. That may make someone think otherwise if they, I know they can't discuss any of it, but you can't stop Aunt Bernice from, you know, spouting off after 8 glasses of Franzia and ham loaf.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, really the deadline for adding jurors would be the point at which the opening statements begin.
Okay.
And so long as that hasn't happened yet, the judge could make a pivot. They could take additional measures to bring more jurors on, because yeah, you never know what could happen with these folks. And we've seen other cases where the jurors have said, oh, I don't know a whole lot about the case. And then there are second thoughts and perhaps they're talking to people and it really mucks up the whole thing.
If I was playing Karen Reed roulette, I'd put money on that one. I know it's not super likely, but it's like betting zero after, you know, a lot of reds, like it's going to come up some point here. And I'm wondering if this is going to be an issue come Monday. Let's talk about the Proctor problem, which was a problem the first round, but he was still employed as an officer of the law. Not that I think that really made a huge difference in the mind of the jury, but now he's fired. Does it make a difference in the mind of the jury, or does his tactics and his, you know, vocabulary still play and have pretty much the same weight as it did round one?
You know, a lot of people think that Proctor helped really tank the government's case in the first trial. There were some unsavory messages and actions on behalf of Trooper Proctor. And so the government has kind of a dilemma because, you know, do they not call him and then risk the defense calling him and the defense kind of suggesting to the jury, hey, look what the prosecution was hiding? Or do they call Trooper Proctor, the government, and sort of front all of these bad facts for the jury and just say, hey, you know, things happen. Trooper Proctor was not, you know, the most involved law enforcement officer in this. And, you know, he's fired now. And that doesn't mean Karen Reed is somehow not guilty. I think that's likely that the track the government is going to take on that.
Yeah. Where just, yeah, get in front of it and like, yeah, he's a bad officer and we got rid of him. But that doesn't mean the whole investigation was bad. Although one could argue that, too. The prosecution wants to introduce texts from O'Keefe about ending the relationship. Messages that he had sent with some friends, family members. They weren't central in the first trial, but now they might be used. How? Well, I mean, what does it establish here? Does it establish motive that, well, Karen thought, well, if I can't be with him, nobody can. Let's hit it in reverse. Or I don't know. What does it show? I'm all for introducing them and seeing them, but does it really just, to me, it kind of just shows that it was an unhealthy relationship and it was coming to an end.
You know, I think the government introducing John O'Keefe's text regarding ending the relationship with Karen Reed would be a substantial misstep. In the first trial, that was one of the problems I thought with the government's case. They overplayed their hand. They were trying to argue that Karen Reed had some motivation to harm John O'Keefe and that she kind of did this on purpose or at least knowingly. And I think that this request to introduce those texts in the second round suggests the government's going to make similar arguments about a motive and that Karen Reed was doing this on purpose. And I think that everyone who has seen this that I've talked to, that is not the impression they got, that this might have been a horrible accident. It's a bit unclear exactly what happened, but it likely wasn't Karen Reed maliciously mowing down John O'Keefe. And for the government to try to ride that horse again, I think would be stupid.
The How's Long to Die in Cold at 2:27 a.m. It's the battle of the experts with this one. That's got to be confusing for a jury where you have one independent expert saying, no, it means this. And then you have the actual people from Cellebrite going, no, you're misinterpreting the coding and how this actually works. Your version does say this, but if you actually understand how it works and here's why it works and how it works, it means this. It's based on the browser window opening, not the other. And it really kind of comes down to what you want to believe. Like, who do you feel more inclined to get behind? But this, to me, I don't know how this is even up for debate. It seems like this would be something that it's either factually black or white. Why can we not get to some sort of factually black or white answer on this topic?
Lawyers, man. It's just, you know,
you effers.
That's part of an attorney's job is to present the best version of the facts for your client that you can. And at least according to some, there's one version of these searches that happened at this time. There's another version where somebody is colorably arguing through an expert that no, it happened at a different time. And it's going to be terribly confusing for the jury. I'm a little surprised the court is allowing it because what we're talking about is raw data and really just what that data means. And the defense did a good job of drumming up what they think it means. And I guess the jury's going to hear about that again and be confused again.
Yeah. I mean, I am surprised the court, is the court just as confused as everybody else going, well, we don't do these sort of extractions. We don't truly know, but one expert says this, I mean, maybe they just don't know themselves. I mean, could the court have at some point here in this intermission between trials, knowing that this is going to come up, I don't know, looked into it themselves a little bit more to factually try and get a black or white answer to how this data is produced? Or is it just, well, we just kind of got to make a decision based on what we know?
Yeah, probably not. Courts are usually disinclined to do their own kind of investigation. Mm-hmm. Now, occasionally they can appoint someone to do an investigation for them. But, when they do their own investigation, that potentially makes the judge and court staff witnesses. Mm-hmm. And then they could be called at the trial in the case. And so it would be unlikely for the court to do that. They kind of got to rely on what they're getting.
Yeah, it would probably make it even messier. New thing to this case, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, is the all of the interviews, all of the Karen contradictions, and there are a lot of them. I mean, just the night of the incident itself, you have Karen initially saying on camera, well, could I have hit him? I might have hit him. He didn't look mortally wounded. And then back to theoretical talking, which I find very interesting that she flat out said in present tense, he didn't look mortally wounded. That's a statement of seeing something. It's not a theoretical, well, if I had looked at him and he didn't look mortally wounded, I would have done this. It was just, he didn't look mortally wounded. You got that. Then you get, I didn't remember dropping him off. And then I saw him and I pulled away. Then I saw and watched him stick his head in the door. And then I saw him get in another statement. And I left because I was not feeling good. And I left because I was angry. I mean, and she's listening to U2 on her stereo really loud in the car, blasting it. So we have all these variants on things she has publicly said. And the jury, if they can get it in some way or shape or form, can see the yin and the yang of all of this and just how inconsistent these statements are. First question, how are they going to get it in without Karen being on the stand?
Sure. So the government is entitled to present statements, including hearsay statements, out-of-court statements that the defendant made or that are attributable to the defendant because under a hearsay exception called admission by a party of opponent. Mm-hmm. And so the government will be able to show, hey, the defendant said this, but then she said this, and then she said this, and those things don't really jive mm-hmm. together to show that the defendant was being inconsistent about how she was describing what happened and her mental state and everything else. And so I think that that is a problem, and it is compounded by the additional statements she has made, Karen Reed, since the trial mm-hmm. to the media and to others.
Yeah, they're taking it all. I mean, it's just, I mean, I've clipped them out already, and it's just a laundry list of insanity. It's just things that look really, really bad. Again, none of it shows that she hit him, but it shows a lot of uncertainty. It shows that she clearly wonders if she did, not this, I couldn't have, that's impossible, but I'm sure we'll see the, did I? And I couldn't have, it's impossible, back to back. When can they get this in? I mean, can they, I know that we saw the kind of laundry list of how they're planning to do opening statements, and they're planning on using video. Is opening when they're planning on just, you know, bursting the dam open, going, look, she contradicts herself everywhere. Let's begin at this point. Or do they have to have a witness on the stand to introduce that sort of stuff? That's my question of how are they getting it in? Because clearly if Karen's on the stand, boom. But if she never takes the stand, how do they introduce this?
So they could reference it in opening. That's a little risky because, especially for the prosecution, if you say something in opening, and then that, for some reason, doesn't come into evidence during the trial, you're risking a serious mistrial. And so the more cautious approach would be to sort of vaguely reference inconsistent statements and then put witnesses on the stand to whom Karen Reed made these statements. And those witnesses would be allowed to testify, hey, Karen Reed told me this. Hey, Karen Reed told me that. And if there's video evidence, people with foundation regarding that video, like if it's body cam, you'd have an officer up there. So there are witnesses through whom they can get in these statements from Karen Reed, and it really could be problematic, especially with Karen Reed's like obstinance now that it couldn't possibly have been me. Well, those statements you made, the day of suggest otherwise.
Well, you certainly have that with the did I hit him and all that with the first responders and everything there, but a lot of these statements were made to like Dennis Murphy at Dateline and other, other reporters who were documenting the case. So it was, I mean, you probably find maybe, I don't know, some friends who it may have been stated to, but these were stated in media interviews. So who do you call to say she said this to me? Do you call the reporters? I mean, who takes the stand to say, yes, she said this to me?
Generally, calling reporters to talk about statements of defendants is disfavored. There's sort of this argument that we don't want a chilling effect on reporters, getting important information out to the public and then being hauled into court and scrutinized for it. So what usually happens is the government will just have an investigator review the footage, review the Dateline thing. There's no dispute as to whether she actually gave the interview and whether it's her in the interview. And the investigator could just say, hey, I've compiled all of these videos that are public statements by the defendant, and they're relevant to this case. Jury, you've got to hear this.
So we can get it in. It's not going to be a real question of where it's going to be.
No, I don't
think so. All right, good. That's going to be interesting. All right, to wrap up, strongest thing you think that the prosecution is going in with this time and the strongest thing that you think the defense has going for them this round?
You know, with the defense, I think that really what happened has been so muddled. There has been so many suggestions here and there and all different kinds of defense theories. And so to bring that chaos and to bring that confusion and to just say, hey, look, we don't really know what happened here. And if we don't know what happened here, can we really convict this person of a crime? That's defense's best approach. Mm-hmm. Prosecution's best approach is defendant. It's Karen Reed.
Yeah.
It's using her inconsistent statements and then sort of her brash, some would say maybe callous and arrogant demeanor, aloofness afterwards in public media statements to show, hey, look, you can't believe a word this person says, and the evidence instead suggests she did it.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now. and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.